the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
So my name is Ron Placone. I'm a comedian and a writer. I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm also a big pet lover, and I am a husband. And I'd like to think I'm a family man, and I'm a big music enthusiast. Well, to start, basically at the earliest, I mean, I think the big thing is the Iraq War. I was a freshman in college when the Iraq War was really ramping up. And prior to college, I was not very politically engaged. I mean, I had opinions on the world, and I was starting to get a little more, you know, engaged with the world around me from that angle. But I didn't really have contemporary political opinions or anything like that. I was just kind of a kid, you know, concerned with playing in bands and stuff like that. And I got to college and I started kind of looking around and I just thought, why are we in Iraq? Why are we there? It doesn't make any sense to me. Iraq did not do 9/11. This is what's going through my head as a college kid. And, you know, I had family members that went over there, and I had friends. I mean, you know, some of my classmates. It was a weird situation too, because they would do things like sign up for the ROTC under the impression they were just going to do a weekend a month domestically, and it was going to help them pay for college. And they ended up being sent to Iraq. I mean, I had a friend of mine who was just in some of my classes, and we were just friends. And one day he came up to me and he said, "Hey, I'm going to be leaving for Iraq." And I said, "Why?" And he's like, "Well, I'm in the ROTC." I didn't even know he was in the ROTC. But he said, "I'm in the ROTC. I was just doing a weekend a month to help pay for college. And they're sending me to Iraq." And I kind of thought, why are we there? Why are we in this war? And so I started exploring that question. Why are we in Iraq? Why are we in this war? And I learned a lot about my own country that I did not know. I learned a lot about what we do around the world. I read a guy named Noam Chomsky in Manufacturing Consent. And there were a couple kind of radical media groups around campus that I joined. I saw the documentary Outfoxed. I started getting involved in community media. I started watching Democracy Now! On a daily basis. And it really changed my outlook on the world. And I became a pretty big lefty and still am to this day. So that's basically, if I had to just summarize two words, what radicalized me: Iraq War. I think for a lot of people, there's a particular moment that just sort of jolts them awake. There's a particular, for instance, and for some people, it's the Iraq War. For some people, it might have been Vietnam. For some people, it could have been the day Trump got elected. But there's a lot of, those moments, they really do wake people up, whatever it may be. Maybe it's something, maybe it was just the first time they saw a tent city, or, you know, I mean, it could be big or small, something that was in the news a lot or not. But I think a lot of people, they have those particular moments, and that's what radicalizes them. You know, when I started kind of waking up politically, I kind of migrated to just the idea of media, because one of the things that just struck me so hard was the mass media's cooperation in selling this bogus war. And, you know, before then, I wasn't really paying attention to, I mean, to me, the news was just the news. I would just kind of turn on the news and see what was going on, some, and that was it. I didn't understand the idea of, or well, not that I didn't understand it. It's not all that complicated, but I wasn't aware of issues of media consolidation, issues of the corporate media in the United States, what that really meant, what they were really doing, the agenda that they really served as far as, you know, they're serving their shareholders and their advertisers, and they're pretty much owned by Wall Street. I wasn't abreast to any of that. And I started learning about it via the way Fox News in particular helped sell the Iraq war. Of course, Fox News wasn't the only participant. I mean, the New York Times, CNN, I mean, they were all played their role. But in particular, it blew my mind, again, as somebody who is 18 years old, just kind of waking up to these things. It blew my mind that, wait, the Bush administration was faxing talking points. This is just long enough ago that people were still faxing a lot. But the Bush administration is faxing talking points to cable news networks. How can that happen? How can that happen in a place like the United States? I thought we were the bastion of freedom and the bastion of democracy. How can something like this happen? Surely it's never happened before. This is an anomaly, right? Oh no, it's happened before. It's happened since. It's actually who we really are as a country. And it's actually what powerful people really do in this place. And so that was a huge awakening for me. And I know that as I recite these things, you know, it almost sounds comically naive, but again, this was many years ago, and I was very young, and when you think about it from that perspective, to someone who's just not aware of these things, it really is mind-blowing that this sort of thing happens and still happens. So I really started paying attention to media, like mass media, media consolidation, which of course led me to being concerned about the free and open internet. So I got really into issues of net neutrality. And to this day, I mean, that's still kind of what I'm all about. I mean, I talk about net neutrality a lot. I talk about digital rights a lot because I do believe we're at a point in history where the internet is clearly a utility in our lives, but it's not treated as such. And it really needs to be for part of our evolution as a species and our evolution in humanity. And it's connected, no pun intended, to so many other things. You know, you look at how the digital landscape can help us, even with things such as combating climate change. I mean, you know, the digital landscapes allows us to be a little more virtual in our work, you know, even in our education to an extent. I'm not saying I think that school should be completely virtual. I think there is something very important about being in the classroom, but you know, it still is a tool that certainly has its uses. And of course, you know, it's so essential for getting information. So I think we're at a point in history where it's time for the internet to kind of have its renaissance in the way electricity did. I mean, there was a point in time where electricity was just something that, like, there were a lot of underserved places that didn't have access to quality electricity, or in some cases, electricity at all. There still are some of those places, by the way, which is kind of mind-blowing too in and of itself. But we've come a very, very long way as far as high quality electricity being available. It's time to do that with the internet. And that's why I support municipal broadband, which is city owned internet all across the country. I encourage people to always be open to new ideas, to always be exploring. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm getting preachy or reciting a cliche here, but you know, kind of try to demonstrate some patience with people. And sometimes this is something I even struggle with. But the reality of the world we live in, and again, I mean, you know, your podcast is really highlighting this, which I think is really, really cool. And I love the concept of your podcast. There are people who had the experience I had many years ago at this point. There are people having that same experience every day where there's something that jolts them awake, where all of a sudden they're looking around and they're just realizing one of the many, many things they don't know. I mean, there's still so many things that none of us know that people don't know. And that's part of being human. But, you know, when you have one of those just huge life-changing awakening moments, it's very powerful. And in many ways, it's bittersweet because usually you wake up to the ugliness of the world. But it's also a very beautiful thing because I think it speaks to the human condition. It speaks to what it means to be human. It speaks to what it means to love in many ways, because when you have these awakening moments, it's because you are capable of having love in your heart for the world around you. You know, I mean, despite all the problems in the world, and there are very, very many, and I have a lot of concerns for the future of this planet, humanity, more or less. The planet's not going anywhere, but we might be. And so, you know, that there are times where that's overwhelming, even. I mean, some of my friends who are, I have a good friend who's a climate scientist who is probably, it's probably a big testament to his patience that he hasn't blocked my phone number yet, because I text him in a panic quite often. And he's probably like, Ron, I have kids, dude, you gotta chill. But despite all that, I do have a lot of love for humanity. I have a lot of love for people and places. And I think that when you have that awakening, it really is a testament to one's ability to love. And I know that's a bit of a cliche, but it is so because it's really freaking true. You wouldn't have these awakening moments if you didn't have a lot of love for the world around you and a strong desire to be a participant in it and to do everything in your power to leave it a little better than how you found it.